This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. With me is Laura Chavon. She has a terrific new book. It's a novel in verse for children. What's the title?
The title is The Last Fifth Grade of Emerson Elementary.
And this book has situation, it has plot, it has character, it has everything in it. Whatever made you feel that this is a book for you to write?
I was inspired quite a lot by Spoon River Anthology, Edgar Lee Masters' verse novel from 1915, and how the persona poems in that book show a community and all of its detail, all of its ups and downs, the conflicts and the love between the members of that community. And as a visiting teacher, which I've been doing for many years, that's something that I observe no matter where I go all around the state of Maryland, is that sense of community in the classroom. So that was really the inspiration for the book originally.
That's the voice of Laura Chavon. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and she is formerly editor of the Little Patuxent Review. She's been active in Maryland and is a poet in the schools. She has a degree in teaching, mm-hmm. as well as in dramatic writing.
Yes.
So we'll find out more about her as we go along. But I want, most of all, for you to describe this book.
So when I go out to meet with children and talk about the book, I ask them to imagine that they're starting the first day of fifth grade and that they're the oldest kids in the school and they're the big guys. They've been looking forward to this day for so long, all of their academic careers so far. And they arrive on the first day of school and discover that there is a plan to tear their school down at the end of the year. And then we talk about how would that make them feel and what would they do about it.
How many kids are in your class?
My fictional class has 18 children in it. The book, when I first started it, had 30. So we paired, the book grew over time, but we also paired away the number of characters over time.
When you say we, who does that mean?
Critique groups helped me to pare down the number of characters. I'm a big fan of critique groups. And then working with my editor, we also pared down the last couple of characters to get to the 18.
Well, what impressed me the most is that these children are real. They are multidimensional. They have problems. They have conflicts. They have things at home that are issues. And that is why I feel it is the only thing of its kind right now in verse for children. So will you give us a taste of two poems from this book? Just set it up and tell us who the children are.
Okay, I'm going to share two characters. And the first one I'd like to share is a girl named Nora Hassan, and her family has emigrated to Maryland from Jerusalem. This poem is called Every Morning. Every morning, I braid my hair for school. Sometimes I use the lemon oil my sister gave me. I rub a drop into my hair. The smell reminds me of when I was little, the lemon tree in my grandfather's courtyard. I call him Jadi. He is not Grandpa. Every morning I walk to school. There is a path through the woods. I follow Ben and his father. They look for mushrooms and insects while I gaze up at the trees so tall. There are no trees like this where I come from, Jerusalem, but there are also no gold autumn leaves, no bare branches sprouting in spring. If they demolish our school, I hope they leave these trees alone. I love how cool their shade feels, even though the days are hot. Every morning, Miss Hill tells us we must write in our journals. In June, we will have a record of our fifth grade year to put inside the school time capsule. Before I write a poem, I talk to myself in Arabic. In Arabic, the words sound like a river flowing over rocks, jagged and smooth. I hear Jadi's voice. English isn't good enough for telling poems. It sounds like knives and forks clanking in a drawer.
That is a fabulous example of a character where we get historical background of the character, we get character development, we get the diversity, and we get poetry and lyricism. Let us hear another.
Okay, thank you. This poem is in the voice of Edgar Lee Jones, and he is a biracial character. He's it's been an interesting conversation with kids to ask about. They've asked me about my point of contact with this character. And I come from a bicultural family. I'm a first-generation American. So many of the characters in this book are from more than one culture, and Edgar Lee happens to be one of them. This is an ode to my grandpa. He moves real slow, like one of those giant 100-year-old tortoises at the zoo. He is brown, always smiling, never down, has wrinkled tortoise neck skin. He remembers when my father went to this school. He frowns when I tell him they're going to crash it to the ground. So what if Emerson's getting old? Grandpa talks to me in a voice low and smooth. I've seen you from my window, he'll say, climbing trees the way I used to do, sitting in the branches, telling yourself stories. I wish Grandpa was a kid again. I think we would be friends.
Laura Chavon has written The Last Fifth Grade of Emerson Elementary School. That's a paraphrasing the title. But there is a spiraling event that unifies all of the characters and themes which you've described to me. How did you keep that psychological development going on between 18 people? It's like writing a play with 18 storylines.
I developed a character arc for each person in the book, so each one has their own character arc. And also, when I revised, instead of going from the start of the book to the end of the book and the narrative, I would pull the book apart and work on one character at a time to make sure that I had the arc and the voice for that character. And it was just a way for me to make sure that each person felt of a piece.
Did you do this on index cards like I used to, or something better?
I wish I had a picture to show you. I have a giant binder that I sometimes take to schools with me because it's huge. And you can see that I have a tab for each of the students. And kids, when I go out to work with them, love to see this binder and how much effort went into revision on this book.
Before you made the characters, did you have a background where you say, this is the way they look, this is what they wear, this is the purse she might carry, this is how her hair looks?
Yeah, I did some of that. I wanted to know which neighborhood kids lived in. I knew which neighborhood was the wealthier neighborhood and which kids lived in the apartment complex, which kids were walkers and which ones rode the bus to school. Those kind of things, as I was developing the characters, were really important to know. I even have a little seating chart so I know who was sitting next to each other, because I'm a teacher, Grace. That's my background. So I had to be able to see what the classroom looked like and who was sitting next to whom.
This is up for many awards, and I believe it's going to win every one of them. Laura has worked in the Maryland schools. She has been a finalist for the Rita Dove Poetry Award. She's won the Gettysburg Review Conference for Writers Scholarship, and she represented Baltimore at the 100,000 Poets for Change in Salerno, Italy. She has written several other books. I know you've been published in various literary journals, Fledgling Rag, Raising Lily Ledbetter, Women Poets Occupy the Workspace. Tell us about your other books.
I really what happened, the first thing that happened for me was when my kids got old enough and I got brave enough, I sent a chapbook manuscript to the City Lit Project's inaugural Harris Poetry Prize, named after Clorinda Harris, and was very surprised to have won that chapbook competition. It was judged by Michael Saltzman, who's a wonderful poet based in Baltimore. And
what was that title?
It was called Mountain, Log, Salt, and Stone. Mm. So a lot of these same things about being a child of a bicultural family come up in that book as well. But the audience is adults. So even some of the poems that are told from the point of view of a child, the wording, the vocabulary, the structure of the poems are different because the intended audience is adults.
What age group did you think about when you were writing this?
I thought about third through sixth or seventh grade. Those are the kids that I work with as a poet in the schools. I'm usually in third, fourth, fifth grade, sometimes middle school. So that was really my intended audience.
Well, that is very interesting because, as you know, I told you that this works for adults. And that is why it is a work of art and not a book. I read it completely to find out what happened next. It is a book that if a child has it, a parent is going to pick it up and steal it and take it away and read it at night from their night table. And that, I believe, is extraordinary. Next, the fact that the poetry is embedded in the work and you don't even notice it and don't even say, uh-oh, there's a metaphor. You know, there's a poetic image. It's just so finely tuned. So let's hear another poem.
Thank you so much, Grace. I wanted to share some poems in one particular voice. This is in the voice of a girl named Brianna Holmes. And Brianna's family is living in a motel. They've been placed there because they're homeless. So instead of reading them in the order that they appear in the book, I'm going to read the first poem that I wrote in her voice and then a second one, just so we can talk about how the character developed. So the first poem I wrote in her voice is called Where They Live. At Hannah's father's house, I saw a piano. She called it a baby grand. Looked full grown to me. Rennie's house has its own library, books on every wall, and soft chairs to read in. I went to Sloan and Sydney's. They have their own walk-in closet filled with clothes. Some still have price tags on them. Shoshana's got this little box on her door. She says it has a prayer inside. At the motel where I live, we can't put stuff on our door. If they close our school in June, maybe the kids in my class will get it, what it's like to be homeless. Until then, I want to play at each girl's house, so when my mom gets a job, an apartment, I'll know exactly what I want. A place filled with music and books, closets stuffed with the clothes I design, and my own room, the answer to my prayers. So what started to happen with this character is the only thing that I knew about her at first was that she was homeless, and I knew that sometimes families get placed in motels in Howard County, where I live, temporarily when they need temporary housing. But she began to develop a character, and I don't know where it came from, but she told me that she likes to take the clothing that she's handed down or gets from Goodwill and embellish it so that she feels stylish like the other girls in her class. And so she began to develop the character trait of resilience and resourcefulness, and that took over her character and became more important than the fact that she was homeless. So the first poem in the book that appears, the first thing that we learn about her is a poem called School Clothes. I am hot pink loud, and no one sees the holes that I cover with embroidery. I am sleek black boots up past my knee. No one knows they're plastic and too big for me. If a hem can be sewn, you don't throw out the sweater. Why tear down our school when rebuilding is better? I love hand-me-downs and thrift store jeans, and I'm still stylish as the fifth grade queens.
Let us have another.
Okay.
What made you, what do you love so much that you had to write this book?
I think what I love so much is that the classroom is its own community. When you put a group of children in a classroom together with a teacher, something magical can happen. And I think, as you know from the book, the teacher, Miss Hill, sings folk songs with the kids. One of the things that really stuck with me is when my son was in third grade, and he's in college now, so we're talking a long time ago, I was wandering around in the school one day, and I heard from across the hall, one of the other third grade teachers was singing with her class. They were singing the Bare Naked Ladies song, If I Had $1 Million. And it just stuck with me, the idea that they had this tradition that was unique to that particular class and that particular group of people. There's something really deep and meaningful about that group of children and a teacher coming together and forming a community that lasts for 1 year, that has its own traditions, its own culture, its own habits. And I think that's really what I wanted to explore with the book.
I think that's a very redemptive thing to say, because we have an idea now that our classrooms are automated and that robots are teaching. So you're saying that that is not true, that there is a great deal of humanity going on.
Oh, I absolutely believe there's a great deal of humanity going on. I am concerned. I see new teachers coming in who have come up in the era of the Common Core, and it's so important to have veteran teachers and visiting teachers come and show the newer teachers that there's room within the Common Core and other prescribed curricula to be creative, to welcome the children to express their humanity, so that it's not always about writing nonfiction or writing in response to what you have to fit inside a box, those types of things. So I think it's really important that that kind of information is passed down teacher to teacher in schools.
You're doing that right now, aren't you? You're going to Howard County as the poet in the school system.
Yeah.
And isn't that actually what you're doing?
Yeah, a lot of what I do, I mean, I'm writing with kids, which I love writing poetry with children, but I'm also modeling for teachers how powerful poetry can be, or even creative writing can be in the classroom.
We are talking about The Last Fifth Grade of Emerson Elementary by Laura Chavon. We're at the Library of Congress, but we're actually on location. So we're going to hear some more of these children's voices.
So I wanted to read a little bit more about, or in the voice of the character of Nora, the emigre from Jerusalem. The character of Nora Hassan was inspired in large part by a piece that I heard on NPR. A woman, an American woman, was talking about her Arab-American daughter, and she was getting to be the age where she had to choose whether or not she wanted to wear a hijab. So let me read the poem Hijab. This was the first poem I wrote in this character's voice. On my birthday, there was a package at our front door covered in colorful stamps. My cousin Amina sent it from Paris, where she goes to college. Inside was a headscarf, blue as a clear sky, woven with golden threads. I wrapped the scarf around my face the way my mother does when she puts on her hijab before work. My older sister, whose clothes come from Abercrombie and Fitch, said, "You're not going to wear it, like, outside?" My cousin's letter said there are laws in France forbidding girls to wear a hijab at school. This morning, when I put the hijab on, I thought of you, Miss Hill. Even though you can't help us protest to save Emerson, I want to say thank you for marching for our rights all those years ago, including my right to wear a headscarf at school. Did you know then that you would grow up to be a teacher? When I put the hijab on, I float inside my scarf's blue cloth. The golden threads shimmer like sunshine on water.
That was one of the most memorable poems I can recall after reading that book. And what I have to say is that the political commentary in the book is so gentle, but so important. And at this time in history, you know, that personal remark is like worth a thousand letters to the editor. That says so much. So the thing that I noticed first is the positive element of every one of these conflicts that the children have without being saccharine. There's nothing sentimentalized in this book, but there's always something that is uplifting. So let's keep going.
Okay. Let me read another poem in that character's voice, in the voice of Nora. One of the things I think a great gift as a poet in this book is to be able to carry threads or symbols through the characters, because you have the space of a whole book to develop them. So I loved that idea. In many of Nora's poems, you'll see either lemons or sunshine. It's just, it became a theme for her. And this poem is called Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, my grandfather had a lemon tree. Every day, we went to his house and picked lemons. My sister squeezed them. I added sugar and soda water. We said, "We are drinking sunshine." In my new country, I see bare winter trees, no lemons. Every day after school, my sister goes next door. She watches our neighbor's baby. Our apartment is so quiet, so small. At school, I feel quiet and small. But when Shoshana sits with me at school, I can't stop talking. She wants me to tell her about Jerusalem and the lemon tree. Shoshana has invited me to her house during winter break so I can teach her how to make fizzy lemonade. I hope our whole class goes to Montgomery Middle. If we're sent to two different schools, how will we stay friends? I want to go back to Jerusalem one day and tell someone who never came to America about my friend Shoshana.
And another.
I would like to read a couple of poems in the voice of Edgar Lee Jones. And as the namesake of Edgar Lee Masters, he's sort of the character that bookends the story. And I'm a real fan of form, so I'm going to read a sonnet in the voice of this character. It's called Field Trip. Why did my mom sign up to chaperone? I'll have to answer questions like, who's she? Your mom is white? Well, should I be a clone with her light hair and skin, not brown like me? I'll slide down in my seat and read a book so kids won't stare at us the whole bus ride. I hate when they're pretending not to look. My mom is cool. Why should I have to hide? So what if I am black and also white? Who cares that I don't look just like my mom? My family is different, but we're tight. Get over it, because there's nothing wrong. If someone gets up in my face today, at least that's what I think I'm going to say. And one more. Okay. And then this is a rap poem in the voice of this character. And I had a lot of fun with this poem. So he's talking about the fact that they're going to put their poems into a time capsule that will someday be opened up. Time capsule rap. Hey, me from the future. This is a message from me, the kid you used to be, known as Eddie Jones and sometimes Edgar Lee. Do folks in the future call you Mr. Jones, Mr. Grown-Up, Suit-Wearing Jones? How tall are those grown-up bones? Hey, me from the future, this is a message from me on a time capsule ride. Years flash by in warp drive, and I'm coming to you live from, count 'em, 25 years in your past. I want spoilers, man. I've got to know my own story. Am I quiet and shy? Do I chase fame and glory? Hey, me from the future, this is a message from me. When the time capsule's opened, who will you see in my fifth grade poetry? A stranger? A reader? A poet? A brain? Will you forget who I was or stay just the same? If I don't help write that petition, will it be something I'm sorry for when you're future me?
Since you mentioned form and though craft is best done when we do not know it's a sonnet or what the form is, and I think that that's where you excel, will you go to the back of the book and describe the epilogue that you've prepared, which has all of the forms of poetry, which must have taken you a year to compile, and read us, for an example, just tell us a couple of the forms that you mentioned, and then read us what is under narrative.
Okay. So the back of the book, there are two parts. One is a list of the forms in the book called Favorite Forms from Room 5H. And, you know, the new phrase in education is mentor text. So all of the sections here, for instance, where it says, as you mentioned, narrative poem. So there's a description of what the narrative poem is as a form. There's a suggestion for writing, but underneath it, there it says model poem, and it gives the page number. And mentor text has become the phrase for what you would show students for them to model themselves after. So we had that in mind in putting this together. And then the next section is a list of poetry prompts. And these are ones that I use in the classroom all the time. But again, it lists a poem starter and then gives a model, a mentor text from the book for children to read and practice with.
As an example, give us one of the forms.
Okay.
And read us everything under that.
All right. Narrative poem. Narrative poems tell a story or describe an event. They are often written in free verse. Suggestion. In a poem, think about a time when you had to make a decision. Maybe you wanted to run for student council. Maybe you had to choose whether you wanted to give up soccer so you could try out for a dance company. Describe how you decided what to do. And then the model poem is given News at the Newseum by Sloane Costley.
And how many forms are there? I see rhyming poems. I see odes. I see rap poems. I see list poems. You know, every teacher should have this book just to use an encyclopedia for forms. That, I was really interested. When I got to the end, I did not expect that. And I will use those.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you. I had a good time putting it together. And I feel like with kids in particular, often when I do a residency, you know, of 4 or 5 days, and I'm with the students many times, we'll often start with a form because they feel safe with having that structure. So we'll use a Fibonacci poem often as the first poem because it's very much like the American version of haiku. There are rules that you can follow that, you know, it makes sense to kids. They get counting out syllables, so it's a good place to start. And then we can kind of grow from there and do something with a little bit less structure as the residency goes on.
Laura Chavon, you are a symbol as well as an icon for teachers. May we have a final poem?
Yes, I'm going to read, there are no spoilers, I promise, but I'm going to read the final poem in the book, which is in Edgar Lee's voice. Goodbye. Yo, notebook, goodbye from your fifth grade poet. My class has moved up. I wore a fine white suit, black shirt, silver tie. When I walked across the stage, I knew my mom would cry. I am writing one last poem, knowing my grandpa is there, somewhere, reading over my shoulder, never looking a day older. I won't forget this year, how we tried to keep this building alive, how fighting back made our classroom thrive. In 25 years, when the time capsule gets sprung from its wall, I will take you out and read all my poems about friends, sad times, things that made me want to rhyme. I know you'll be waiting in the dark, a quiet spark, so I'll never forget a fifth grade boy called Edgar Lee who loved poetry.
That is the voice of Laura Chavon. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on location today. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. This series is funded by the Witter Binner Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation, and from Friends of Poetry, Maria Van Buren, Logan Ambrose, Avi Deshashani, Ken McNeil, and Hiram LaRue. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.